Good afternoon, listeners, and welcome to the Dogs Program. We are the Dogs, the Defence of Government Schools Program, and we're here every Saturday to defend and promote public education. We have a very full program for you, so we'll just get right into it. First off, we're having a look at what's happening in Australia's tertiary education scene. Over to Andy.
Thanks. Something is rotten in Australia's tertiary education, and UTS's suspension of teaching courses is one of its biggest disgraces. And this was published in The Guardian on Thursday, the 21st of August, and written by Isabel Creeley. If preparing teachers for New South Wales during an ongoing teacher shortage isn't a public good, what is? Something is rotten in tertiary education, not in the classrooms, but in the boardroom. Every glossy announcement masks the same reality: cuts, closures, and a hollowing out of the very institutions meant to serve the public good. I'm a lecturer in education at University of Technology, Sydney. My colleagues are outstanding, the students dedicated. And yet, despite newly developed and accredited teacher education courses and courses that have been delivered for 35 years, our education programs are being temporarily suspended from autumn 2026. While the announcement avoids the term closure, in this sector, that is what's likely to follow. This means the suspension of secondary and primary education degrees, alongside teaching English to speakers of other languages, TESOL, and applied linguistics, the very programs designed to address teacher shortages. And the justification? Low student enrolments. But these numbers come from auditors looking at spreadsheets, not classrooms. Education and commerce students, for example, are coded separately, even though in practice they sit within the same education or business cohorts for all of their subjects. On paper, the numbers might look thin. In reality, the rooms are full. Once these programs are paused, they are almost impossible to bring back. Student intake stops, momentum is lost, expertise disperses, partnerships dissolve, and whole areas of knowledge are lost. The consequences will be far-reaching. Schools and communities will be left without a trusted partner. Aspiring teachers will lose access to high-quality, practice-based training. Nationally, we will lose vital research capacity, especially in the areas related to vulnerable and multilingual communities. What has taken decades to build can be dismantled in a single budget cycle. UTS is a public university with a legislated obligation to meet the needs of the community. Its charter clearly states that the university exists for the public good. If preparing teachers for New South Wales schools during an ongoing teacher shortage isn't a public good, what is? The New South Wales Department of Education reports a daily shortfall of nearly one-third of its casual teachers. Primary and secondary teachers are the second and third largest occupations in shortage, according to the Australian Government's 2024 Occupational Shortage List. And yet, one of Australia's leading universities is suspending the very programs that feed this workforce. The burden of proof should be on the university to explain how cutting teacher education fulfils its mission. Beyond the numbers, it is worth remembering who these programs serve. For years, UTS has been a pipeline for teachers equipped to work with refugee background students, newly arrived migrants, learners from linguistically diverse communities, and second chance adult learners with basic literacy and numeracy needs. As an English as an Additional Language or Dialect EALD teacher and researcher, I have seen the difference that skilled, culturally responsive teachers can make. Suspending these courses doesn't just threaten teacher numbers, it threatens the rights of some of our most vulnerable students to an equitable education. The social justice implications are profound. UTS is one of the preferred providers of the EALD trained and adult literacy and numeracy teachers to government and other schools and adult education centres. In a state as multicultural as New South Wales, with more than a third of students from language backgrounds other than English, gutting these subjects is indefensible. Closing down or suspending programs like these doesn't just affect UTS. It removes national capacity in areas core to access, equity, and social cohesion, as well as economic productivity. Once more, it seems that teacher education is in the firing line. If the public is constantly told teachers can't read and write, they only need an ATAR of 50, why would anyone sign up? If hardworking and dedicated teachers are told they're only in it for the holidays, why would they stay? And now a university is seemingly dismantling the courses that educate the teachers themselves. This is more than short-sighted, it's self-sabotage. When we hollow out the teaching profession, we undermine our children's future. When we strip away specialist programs like TESOL, Adult Literacy and Numeracy, and EALD, we deepen inequality, leaving the most vulnerable students further behind. Something is rotten in the state of Denmark, and the question is, what happens to the state of New South Wales when there are no teachers left to hold it up? What indeed? Back to you.
Thanks, Andy. Yeah, it seems like the humanities are being less and less appreciated by the people who count the beans, the bottom liners, and more humanities courses are getting slashed. Here's Andy for more.
Thanks. Courses within teaching, languages and media among hundreds to be slashed across Australian universities. Vice Chancellors say they've been forced to restructure, but critics point finger at unaccountable university management. And this was published in The Guardian on Sunday the 24th of August and written by Caitlin Cassidy. Hundreds of university courses within teaching, languages, archaeology and media are among those being slashed as the tertiary sector pushes back against confused government policies. Almost half of Australia's universities have restructured in the last year, leading to the merging or disbanding of more than 50 schools of study and drastic reductions in course options for students, particularly in the humanities. The University of Wollongong is cutting a string of disciplines including cultural studies, languages, archaeology and linguistics, while the University of Tasmania will merge its School of Humanities and Social Sciences, combine politics and international relations into a single major, and no longer offer German. Southern Cross University is discontinuing undergraduate degrees in contemporary music, art, design and digital media. Australian National University, which on Wednesday said it would announce no further involuntary redundancies as part of its Renew ANU process, has so far proposed merging or shutting the schools of music, sociology, crime and social justice, political science, international relations, and public policy. It will also close the Australian National Dictionary Centre, the Humanities Research Centre, the Centre for European Studies, and the ANU School of Music. Its Vice Chancellor, Professor Genevieve Bell, said the university was facing an incredibly challenging period, adding, "Living outside our means is not a responsible financial position." Guardian analysis, based on data provided by every university bar the ANU, forecasts the total figure of job losses to occur by 2027 at about 2,400 across 15 institutions. About 143,000 people worked in the sector as of 2024, according to the Department of Education, equating to a cut of about 1.6% of the workforce. About 847 staff have already been made redundant nationwide, including 218 at the ANU and 259 at the University of Southern Queensland. The proposed cuts across the sector include up to 400 positions, or a tenth of the workforce, at the University of Technology Sydney, UTS. Last week, UTS temporarily paused student enrolments for nearly a fifth of its courses in business, design, engineering and IT, health, law and science, as it pursued $100 million in cost cuts. That followed the release in June by Macquarie University of a draft proposal showing 42 full positions in the Faculty of Arts and 33 in Science and Engineering would be cut alongside almost 40 mergers and curriculum reductions, discontinuing majors in politics, gender studies, media and performing arts. A spokesperson for Macquarie said the proposals were in response to long-term challenges shaping higher education and more detail would be made public soon. The CEO of Universities Australia, Luke Shee, said universities were understandably in a difficult financial position because of a decade of successive and consistent changes to policy and funding settings, with research investment falling to a record low. Chronic underfunding and confused policy settings are holding universities back, he said. We've called for increased funding for research, a fairer student funding system that doesn't punish students or universities, growth for our international education sector, and financial support for campus infrastructure. The University of Newcastle needs to save $20.6 million annually, while Charles Sturt University, CSU, has announced it will cut its operating budget by $35 million by the end of 2027. The exact number of job losses at each institution has not been announced. As distressing as this decision is, it should not come as a surprise, the Vice-Chancellor of CSU, Professor Renee Leon, said. In recent years, the Australian university sector has been in crisis, jeopardised by needlessly restrictive and unsupportive government policies. Charles Sturt has been hard hit by the loss of international students and has no indication from government that will receive a fair share. The president of the National Tertiary Education Union, NTEU, Dr. Alison Barnes, said the cuts would have a devastating impact. She said they followed 4,524 redundancies during 2020 and 2021. It's a short-sighted strategy, Barnes said. In almost every case, the cuts are completely unjustified. No consideration is given to the enormous damage this does to the institutions, the colleagues that are left behind, and the student experience. Barnes said the fact the federal government recently increased the international student intake for 2026 and has flagged that a new funding model will be established under the recently commenced Australian Tertiary Education Commission showed that bad management, not policy settings, were driving cuts. Vice-chancellors are taking home an average of $1 million a year, Barnes said. Poor workforce planning is a symptom of the broken governance structures that unaccountable university leaders operate under. The Minister for Education, Jason Clare, said the federal government would be advised by an expert council on university governance when he meets with his counterparts in October, which would address the remuneration of executives. On Tuesday, he announced that the Commonwealth would strengthen the powers of the tertiary sector's regulator for the first time since its establishment. If you don't think that we've got challenges with university governance, you've been living under a rock, Clare told an AFR summit on Tuesday. Other vice-chancellors said existing policy settings, including the Morrison-era Jobs Ready Graduate JRG program, which increased the cost of humanities degrees, urgently needed an overhaul. At the University of Canberra, where 200 positions and some strategic programs have been cut, the Vice-Chancellor, Bill Shorten, said it was imperative the federal government scrapped the JRG program and improved university funding. When humanities students of 2025 are paying double that paid by a student who graduated in 2019, and they are facing the additional challenges of cost of living and placement poverty, it is hardly a draw card, he said. A spokesperson for Western Sydney University also called for the JRG package to be scrapped. WSU expects to cut 300 jobs and have an $80 million deficit next year. The cost of degrees is limiting access and participation, disproportionately affecting students from low socioeconomic backgrounds, they said. And that is no surprise at all. I was fortunate enough to attend university in the 80s prior to the introduction of HECS, and that is the only way to have full, fair education available to all. Make it free. Back to you.
Thank you, Andy. It is problematic to think about how the humanities are being devalued. Language and teaching, these are really important ways of communication, really important aspects in our society. And we've seen what happens to societies who wipe out their humanities, and it's not pretty. But let's have a break. We'll be back with more dogs after this.
3CR is radical radio.
Through our on-air content and community structure, we promote real change for workers' rights, gender equality, environmental action, disability justice, and on racism and First Nations sovereignty.
Do you want to be part of real radical change?
We need you to subscribe. It's just $40 concession, $80 waged, $150 for a band or organisation, and $300 solidarity.
Call 03-9419-8377. That's 9419-8377. Or subscribe online at 3cr.org.au/subscribe.
You're listening to 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM. Visit the 3CR website at 3cr.org.au/podcast to hear the most recent recording from each show, or 3cr.org.au/streaming to listen live.
Welcome back to the Dogs program. We are the Dogs, the Defence of Government Schools program. And now I'm going to pass over to Sorrel, who's got an interesting article about principals all banding together for a common cause. Over to you, Sorrel.
Thanks. This article is written by Brett Henneberry and is entitled School Principals Unite on Bold National Agenda. Australia's two peak bodies for public school principals have joined forces to drive a new reform agenda aimed at lifting equity, well-being, and leadership across the nation's schools. For the first time, the Australian Secondary Principals Association, ASPA, and the Australian Government Primary Principals Association, AGPPA, have issued a joint statement representing more than 11,000 leaders from 7,500 government schools, educating 2.8 million students. In recent years, Australia's principals have taken steps to join forces to tackle their major challenges facing the sector's school leaders. In 2024, all state and territory public secondary school principals associations reunited into ASPA, positioning the peak body as the undisputed national voice for Australia's 2,200 government combined and secondary school principals, who look after more than 1 million students. 3 years earlier, during the COVID pandemic, ASPA and the Australian Primary Principals Association, APA, convene to form the Coalition of Australian Principals, CAP, to amplify the voice of principals on the national stage. Framed around six key priorities, the statement sets out a vision for a world-leading child-centred education system. Underpinned by healthy, effective leaders, and stronger policy collaboration. At the heart of the two principals associations' reform agenda is improving the state of play in occupational health and well-being. The joint statement pointed to escalating violence, stress, and burnout among school leaders, and called for measures to reduce unsustainable workloads, ensure psychosocial safety, and provide greater access to support. Proposals include legislative protections, government-funded sabbaticals, and a nationally consistent role description that properly reflects the demands of modern leadership. ASPA and AGPA are also pushing for harmonised protections against occupational violence, better reporting systems, and public campaigns to build community confidence in schools. Measures, they say, will not only safeguard leaders, but also strengthen school environments for staff and students. Beyond immediate well-being concerns, the associations are calling for systemic reform, stressing the need for deeper collaboration between policymakers and school leaders, including a stronger voice in shaping funding agreements and education policy. The association's proposals include streamlining national teacher registration, boosting leadership development through consistent career pathways, mentoring and updated standards, and providing more flexible conditions to retain experienced principals. At the student level, the joint statement prioritises well-being and engagement, urging cross-sector partnerships, targeted support for disadvantaged families, and greater autonomy for leaders to tailor curricula. Pat Murphy said ASPA and AGPA are two like-minded associations with the same values and aspirations for Australia's schools. The partnership will help drive innovation and excellence in government education, ultimately benefiting students, teachers, and communities nationwide, Murphy told The Educator. Joining ASPA and AGPA together underscores the importance of principals in our sector having greater autonomy and voice in national discussions about education. Murphy said that by collaborating, the two associations can effectively advocate for policies that reflect the realities of government schools and the unique needs of students. Government school principals are on the front lines and understand the challenges and opportunities that a quality public education can provide, he said. Empowering government school leaders to shape the national conversation ensures that decisions are informed, relevant, and beneficial, ultimately leading to improved educational outcomes and a stronger future for our students and communities. ASPA President Andy Meeson said that when principals have genuine agency in shaping policy, we get solutions that actually work in classrooms and schools, not just in theory. This partnership amplifies our collective voice, ensuring that the expertise of those who lead our 7,500 government schools directly informs the national conversation about what our 2.8 million students need to thrive, he said. Whether we're advocating for legislative protections against occupational violence, asking for meaningful consultation in policy design, or ensuring principals' professional expertise is embedded in the Better, Fairer Schools funding agreement implementation, our joint approach models the collaboration we're seeking from government. We all need to work together in the interests of our kids. When asked how the ASPA-AGPA partnership might better help achieve the strategies laid out in the statement, as opposed to previous approaches, Murphy said it enhances the association's ability to implement strategies effectively. The partnership unites primary and secondary leaders, fostering a cohesive approach to shared educational challenges, he said. This collaboration amplifies our collective voice, ensuring that principals' insights directly inform policy design and implementation. Murphy added that by prioritising principal well-being, safety and professional development, the partnership can advocate for meaningful changes that reflect the realities of school leadership. Together, we can drive a more equitable education system, ensuring every child thrives in a supportive and effective learning environment, he said. This joint work moves beyond previous approaches by emphasising collaboration and shared expertise. Back over to you.
Thanks for that, Sorrel. And now I've got an interesting article about teachers' welfare. This is an article from The Educator titled 90% of Australian Teachers Severely Stressed Study. More than two-thirds, 68.8% of teachers surveyed by researchers from the University of New South Wales, Sydney, described their workload as largely or completely unmanageable, with a staggering 90% reporting severe stress. Meanwhile, more than two-thirds of teachers are experiencing moderate to extremely severe symptoms of depression and anxiety. According to the study, the figures for depression and anxiety alone are more than double the national averages. This is not just a well-being issue, it's a workforce issue. The University of New South Wales Sydney study, which surveyed 5,000 primary and secondary school teachers across the country between 2022 and 2024, is the first to examine rates of depression, anxiety and stress of Australian teachers, offering critical insights for education policymakers at a time when the profession is at breaking point. This is not just a well-being issue, it's a workforce issue. Lead researcher Dr. Helena Granciera from the School of Education at UNSW's Faculty of Arts, Designs and Architecture said, "Our findings show that teachers are experiencing mental health symptoms at rates far above the general population, and that these symptoms are closely linked to their workload and intentions to leave the profession. Unsurprisingly, teachers' ability to maintain workloads was identified as a key factor influencing their mental health. Those who report their workload as unmanageable were significantly more likely to experience depressive symptoms, which in turn were strongly associated with their intentions to leave the profession. Teachers are telling us that they're overwhelmed, not by teaching itself, but by the growing burden of non-core tasks," Dr. Granciera said. "Administrative duties, compliance requirements, and excessive data collection are taking time away from lesson planning and student engagement. This is leading to burnout and a sense of professional disillusionment. Dr. Gruncieres said, "The new research provides clear evidence that improving teachers' working conditions is not just beneficial, but essential. If we want to retain skilled educators and ensure quality education for all students, we must address the root causes of teacher stress and mental health decline," she said. The study's authors are calling for a multi-pronged approach to support teachers' well-being, including targeted policy reforms to cut non-essential admin, school-level monitoring of well-being and workload, investment in flexible educator-specific digital mental health supports, and system-wide measures to lift teacher retention and curb burnout. Dr. Gruncieres said the implications of the study's findings extend far beyond the classroom, noting that poor teacher mental health has been linked to lower student achievement, reduced classroom quality, and diminished student well-being. Teachers' mental health is intricately related to students' outcomes, both in terms of student mental health themselves, but also students' academic achievement, Dr. Gruncieres said. It's clear improving teacher well-being should be a priority of policymakers, not just for teachers, but for our education system as a whole. Yes, it's a shame in Australia that people seem to forget teachers are people and they just enjoy teacher bashing instead of actually looking at the systemic issues that make it harder for teachers to do their job. Now we're moving to a topic that's on the news agenda lately, child safety and early childhood care. This is a press release from the Victorian AEU. Child Safety Rapid Review finds safety, education and best interests of children must come first. The Australian Education Union Victorian branch has welcomed the recommendations of the Victorian Rapid Child Safety Review released on the 20th of August, with more government action required. It goes without saying that kindergarten teachers and educator members of the AEU are deeply distressed by the allegations of abuse in early childhood education and care. "Every child should be safe and secure in early learning," said AEU Victorian Branch President Justin Mullaly. "Children have a fundamental right to access high-quality early childhood education that is delivered by qualified, well-supported and well-paid teachers and educators. There are important recommendations in the Victorian Rapid Child Safety Review that should be urgently implemented to ensure this fundamental right is delivered. These include recommendations that better empower early childhood teachers and educators to report child safety concerns, stronger accountability for providers, and further measures for funding and structural reform in early childhood education and care that puts the best interests of children first. Teachers and educators are the best resource we have to keep children safe in early childhood settings. This means government must invest in the workforce, ensuring they receive professional pay and working conditions to match. There is much more work for governments to do to make further changes that ensure child safety and enhance the delivery of high-quality learning, including the establishment of child safety consultative committees at each service, as well as mandated supported delivery for services that are at risk of not meeting higher level national quality standards, and more support for parents and carers when engaging with services," Mr. Mullaly said. AEU Victorian Branch Vice President for Early Childhood, Cara Nightingale, said it was vital that early childhood educators and teachers were supported to confidently speak up. "We welcome recommendations to an independent regulatory authority, and the AEU calls for the new established authority to be appropriately funded and well-resourced. We welcome recommendations to support better the workforce through mandatory child safe training and professional support, Ms. Nightingale said. Everyone involved in early childhood education has a direct responsibility to embed child safety practices. This starts with providers who have a key role in understanding and implementing child safety practices and supporting the workforce to embed these into their daily practices. It is too often the case that early childhood teachers and educators feel they cannot disclose safety concerns for fear of intimidation or retribution from employers. Profits should never be put before the safety and well-being of children. We welcome the review's recommendations that the Victorian Government advocates nationally for structural improvements in early childhood education and care, including for a national commission and funding reforms that address profit drivers in early learning. The AEU is calling for increased public provision of early childhood education and care. The Victorian Government's investment in 50 early education and childcare centres is an important first step. Well, I think we should have a break there. Now we've got something special for you. Here's a piece of music. Thank you. Welcome back to the Dogs program. We were just listening to an excerpt of Slavisha Fantasi, played by this year's junior state champion for tenor horn, a young fellow called Angus, who is Jean's grandson. Just a very wonderful example of a young person passionate about music. So well done, Angus. Now, let's go overseas with Jeff.
Good afternoon, listeners. I'd like to introduce you to Dennis Prager, who is an American conservative commentator on radio in the States in the early 80s with a religious radio show. He's actually Jewish, not Christian, but he promotes all kinds of religions, very much a social conservative against many different things. Amongst many other things, he's also an anti-vaxxer. He's against LGBTQIA plus people. He thinks that the global warming is a hoax. He started a thing in 2009 called PragerU, which is essentially a website which makes short videos for children and adults, but mainly for children, with a conservative slant. So, for example, he has Columbus saying, you know, slavery's not too bad because it's better than being killed. Basically, that there are only two sexes and the usual conservative stuff. The important reason I'm bringing it to you is there's a story, firstly, on MSNBC by Ali Velshi, and he's had a discussion about this with left-leaning Democratic education spokespeople. And one's a state representative in Oklahoma, the other one is a journalist. I just wanted to read you part of the transcript of that story, which appeared on MSNBC's YouTube under the title, "They Have a 50-State Strategy. PragerU's insidious alternative to PBS hits the US classrooms." Now, PragerU is not, as they say, an accredited university. In fact, it's just a website, and they are not at all a university. They just call it PragerU because they think it sounds good. And I'll just read you the start of the transcript of this video. This is by Ali Velshi, who's the MSNBC host. He says, "The Corporation for Public Broadcasting will be largely shuttered by the end of next month and gone entirely by January. At President Trump's request, Republicans in Congress cancelled its federal funding last month, and that spelled the end of organisations half a century of supporting public radio and television. Now, much has been made of the impact that these cuts are going to have on local news stations, particularly in the rural areas, but the Corporation for Public Broadcasting has also played a huge role in supporting high-quality education programs on PBS, where Sesame Street and Mr. Rogers' Neighbourhood originated, and where that legacy of iconic educational program lives on with Mr. Rogers' spin-off, Daniel Daniels Tigers Neighbourhood, and programs like Sid the Science Kid and Word Girl. Meanwhile, the White House appears to be eyeing an alternative to these kind of PBS kids programs that teach kids social emotional skills, science, readiness and literacy. PragerU is an unaccredited, non-professional organisation founded by conservative talk show host Dennis Prager in 2009. It specialises in creating right-leaning, short educational videos for children and adults, but don't mistake it for a university. Despite its name, the organisation does little to hide its intent to indoctrinate children with the right-wing ideology. And on the bottom of its website, you can find the following disclaimer. Quote, PragerU is not an accredited university, nor do we claim to be. We don't offer degrees, but we do provide educational, entertaining, pro-American videos for every age. End quote. According to Vox, in July, the White House debuted an educational partnership with PragerU at a launch event for a new museum exhibit. Now, the thing about PBS and PBS Kids, which makes parents trust their programs, is the fact that educational professionals and early childhood development specialists played a vital role in producing and developing them. Sesame Street, in particular, was designed to help low-income and minority students aged 2 to 5 overcome some of the disadvantages that they traditionally had when entering school. In fact, a 2016 study found that children in households who were exposed to Sesame Street were 14% more likely to be enrolled at the correct grade level for their age at middle and high school. So, to put it simply, PBS Kids is programming in the public interest. It's improving society. While your kids are watching TV and you're off doing something, the payoff may not be immediate, but the impact is long-lasting. PragerU's content is already being deployed in 10 states across America, including Florida, Arizona and Louisiana. These partnerships allow PragerU's material to be used in public school curricula while not mandating it. But what of PragerU's most loyal supporters happens to be the state currently ranked 50th in education, Oklahoma. This week, Oklahoma announced it will require teachers from New York and California to pass an America First test designed by PragerU before being hired in the state. The state's public school superintendent said the test is an effort to root out, quote, radical left ideology from classrooms and warned that Connecticut, Illinois, Minnesota and others could soon join the list. So what's so concerning about PragerU funding champions of Prager? I'll leave that article there, or that YouTube there, but I just wanted to point out some of the concerns that have been raised on MSNBC about PragerU. I'm going to go to an article about them that appeared in the BuzzFeed, and it's by Morgan Murrell, and it says, a company backed by Trump's White House shared a video for kids saying slavery is better than being killed, and people are furious. PragerU, a conservative media organisation promoting itself as an educational network, is getting called out online for historically inaccurate and misleading messages it's delivering to children, and surprise, surprise, Donald Trump's White House is partnering with them. After Trump rescinded a bill that cut more than $1 billion in funding for CPB, which is the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, CPB announced it would have to shut down, which could force organisations that rely heavily on its funds, like PBS and NPR, into massive budget cuts and layoffs. PragerU describes itself as a non-profit looking to spread American values through the creative use of digital media, technology and edutainment. They offer content for adults as well as learning videos and resources for kids. They state their free content, which includes short videos on topics like politics, history, economics and social issues, helps people of all ages think and live better. But it appears they've earned quite a bit of criticism for a plethora of reasons. Despite its name, PragerU is proudly not an accredited academic institution. Critics have viewed them as an alt-right company, distributing their information through a biased revisionist lens. Critics have said the platform is used to promote their political agenda. The controversial views denying climate change, anti-LGBTQIA plus rights, opposing a minimum of $15 wage, anti-immigration and more are repeatedly under fire. In fact, one of PragerU's history videos is currently going viral for its revisionist ways to explain slavery to children. Anyway, the article goes on to go through the detail of how the kids are talking to Christopher Columbus, who basically, this is my editorial now, saying how, you know, slavery wasn't that bad and you've got to judge us by our own times and things like that. And the kids are supposed to take this on board as being, oh, yeah, of course, you know, slavery wasn't that bad in those days and that sort of thing. Revisionist history. So that's the sort of thing that PragerU is up to. So I would highly recommend, if you get the chance, to have a look at the Ali Velshi video on that. It's he goes into a discussion with a member of Oklahoma's parliament. It's really quite interesting. I'm going to leave that there, though. I'm going to go across to the story down in Texas. This appeared in The Guardian. It's by Maya Yang. And the article is, Texas can't require public schools to display 10 commandments in class, a judge rules. And it begins, Texas cannot require public schools to display the Ten Commandments in every classroom, a judge said on Wednesday in a temporary ruling against the state's new requirement, making it the third such state law to be blocked by a court. A group of Dallas-led area families and faith leaders sought a preliminary injunction against the law, which goes into effect on 1st of September. They say the requirement violates the First Amendment's protections for the separation of church and state and the right to free religious exercise. Texas is the largest state to attempt such a requirement, and the US District Judge Fred Beery's ruling from San Antonio is the latest in a widening legal fight that's expected to eventually go before the US Supreme Court. Even though the Ten Commandments would not be affirmatively taught, the captive audience of the students would likely have questions which teachers would feel compelled to answer. That is what they do, Beery wrote in the 55-page ruling that began with quoting the First Amendment and ending with Amen. The displays are likely to pressure the child plaintiffs into religious observance, meditation on, veneration and adoption of the state's favoured religious scripture, and into suppressing expression of their own religious or non-religious background and beliefs while at school. Beery continued, there is also insufficient evidence of a broader tradition of using the Ten Commandments in a public education, and there is no tradition of permanently displaying the Ten Commandments in public school classrooms. There are ways in which students could be taught any relevant history of the Ten Commandments without the state selecting an official version of the scripture, approving it in state law, and then displaying it in every classroom on a permanent basis. The lawsuit names the Texas Education Agency, State Education Commissioner Mike Morath, and three Dallas area school districts as defendants. Hailing the preliminary injunction, plaintiff Rabbi Mara Nathan said, "As a rabbi and public school parent, I welcome this ruling. Children's religious beliefs should be instilled by parents and faith communities, not politicians and public schools." Heather Weaver, senior counsel for the American Civil Liberties Union's program on freedom of religion and belief, echoed similar sentiments. "Public schools are not Sunday schools. Today's decision ensures that our clients' schools will remain spaces where all students, regardless of their faith, feel welcomed and can learn without worrying that they do not live up to the state's preferred religious beliefs," Weaver said. Meanwhile, Freedom from Education Religion Foundation co-president Annie Laurie Gaylor said, "Religious instruction must be left to parents, not the state, which has no business telling anyone how many gods to have, which gods to have, or whether to have any gods at all." A federal appeals court has blocked a similar law in Louisiana, and a judge in Arkansas told four districts they cannot put up the posters, although other districts in the state said they're not putting them up either. Although Friday's ruling marked a major win for the civil liberties groups who say the law violates the separation of church and state, the legal battle is likely far from over. Religious groups and conservatives say the Ten Commandments are part of the foundation of the United States judicial and education systems and should be displayed. Texas has a Ten Commandments monument on the Capitol grounds and won a 2005 Supreme Court case that upheld the monument. In Louisiana, the first state that mandated the Ten Commandments be displayed in classrooms, a panel of three appellate judges in June ruled that the law was unconstitutional. Anyway, that's the end of the article. But in every case, these religious leaders from all denominations seem to be pushing, especially from the hard right, are pushing religion into classrooms everywhere. And the Dogs absolutely detests this and wishes that the separation of church and state should be absolutely maintained. And with that, I'm going to pass you back to the headquarters of the Dogs. There are so many things going on, but we will keep our eyes on it for you. Have a very nice weekend, folks, and cheerio.
Thank you so much, Jeff. It's quite scary stuff, isn't it? Well, we like to come to the end of a program with some good news. And, of course, we like to finish off our program with our great state school of the week.
Every week on the Dogs program, we have a special segment to show a different state school is a great school.
State schools are great schools.
School of the week.
State school.
School of the
school.
Week.
Great state schools.
State schools.
School of the week.
Schools. School for the week here on the Dogs Program.
And this week's great state school of the week is St Albans Secondary College. And here's a message from the principal. Our college prides itself on the broad curricular and co-curricular programs available to students. We offer VCE, VCEVM, VPC and VET subjects in senior school years and specialist programs for our students in years 7 to 10, with the aim to further extend the talents of each individual in our school. We aim to provide excellence in all our education programs. Our high expectations are reflected through student responsibility and conduct, attendance, academic results, and positive pathways as they exit the college. Student voice and agency is integral to the teaching and learning at the college. Student leadership opportunities are many and varied, such as class captains, SRC, school captains, and house leaders. Offering a supportive community, student wellbeing is fostered at the college, where we ensure every student is connected, protected, and respected. Nurturing students in this way has helped them to thrive and become engaged learners and caring citizens. Our whole school approach to wellbeing builds an inclusive culture of mutual care and respect where diversity is celebrated. The college has a vibrant and friendly atmosphere, and our facilities have consistently evolved over the years. Our strong alumni program, St Albans Connects, has been integral in building productive relationships with past students who contribute to the program to support our current students in a variety of ways. We offer an outstanding educational program supported by an exceptional teaching and education support staff. Our care for our students in partnership with parents provides students with the best opportunity to achieve success and to enjoy their school years. We are proud of the outcomes achieved by our students, and the highly successful pathways they follow is a reflection of the excellent education they experience at our college. And that's a statement by the principal, Craig Jennings. At St Albans, every member of the school community is part of four houses. Each house is named after a famous Australian who embodies the qualities that reflect our school values of leadership, excellence, integrity, and respect. Our house names are Irwin House, red, Freeman House, green, Buttrose House, yellow, and Rosewall House, blue. Throughout the calendar year, staff and students are able to earn points for their house. This can be done through participation in academic, sporting and creative events, including the swimming and athletic carnivals and many other events. Points can also be earned by displaying our school values in class, school environment and in the wider community, such as through subject-based competitions, class awards, students of the month and year-level challenge activities. Year 8, 10 and 12 sub-school house captains and vice captains have been appointed to build student involvement and ownership of the program. The house system provides opportunities for students to interact in a positive way with students from their own year level and across year levels in the school, and contributes to the connectedness of students to their peers and their school. And now some facts and figures from the My School website. The enrolment is 1,680 and the ICSEA is below average at 963, representative of a very diverse urban community. Students with parents in the upper 25% of incomes make up 6% of the student population, the second level of parental income 17%. The third quartile of parental incomes, i.e. below 50%, makes up 26% of student, and the lowest quartile of parental incomes makes up 51% of students, with 87% speaking a language other than English and 1% Indigenous students. The finances, recurrent grants from the Australian government of $6.28 million and from the Victorian government of $23.1 million. Private fees and other contributions make up a further $449,000 and other private contributions another $19,000. And that works out at $18,859 per pupil. And the capital, $2.65 million over 3 years. The NAPLAN results well above average for everything, a really extraordinary achievement for this great school.
Congratulations, St Albans Secondary College. You are our Great State School of the Week. That's all we've got time for today, but if you'd like to find out more about us, you can go to our website at www.adogs.info. That's www.adogs.info. Or you could listen to our podcasts found at the 3CR website. Jean will be back with us next week, but from all of us here at the Dogs, it's bye for now.
I dreamed I saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you and me. Says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead. I never died, says he. I never died, says he. In Salt Lake City, Joe says I, him standing by my bed. They framed you on a murder charge, says Joe, but I'm dead. Says Joe, but I'm dead. The copper bosses killed you, Joe. They shot you, Joe, says I. Takes more than guns to kill a man, says Joe, I didn't die. Says Joe, I didn't die. And standing there as big as life, and smiling with his eyes, says Joe, what they can never kill, went on to organize, went on to organize. From San Diego up to Maine, in every mine and mill, where workers strike and organize, it's there you'll find your hill. It's there you'll find. I saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you and me. Says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead. I never died, says he. I never died, says he.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.